Reflection on us.
I am not a punch card generation. That's all I can say.
As long as I don't have paper, I don't care.
The time is 6:30. The chair will call the Human Services Committee meeting of Monday, June 2nd, 2014 to order. Ms. Davis, could you please call the roll?
Sure. Anita Johnson, excused. Brianna Ayers.
Here.
David Arrington.
Present.
David Hallman.
Present.
Aaron Decker, excused. Greg Retzlaff.
Here.
Julia Alberth.
Here.
Leah Blau.
Present.
And Mike Gable.
Yo.
Okay. We can do this. We'll do citizen comments then if the two of you want to introduce yourselves since you're new after that. Not now, but just I'm prepping you for when we get. Agenda item 2, citizens' comments. If there are any citizens wishing to speak, please come forward, state your name and address for the record, and you have 5 minutes to speak.
Hello. My name is Kathleen Gloff. My address is 2031A 30th Avenue, Kenosha, 53144. I spoke to the county board about passing a resolution on behalf of Kenosha County to put Badger Care, federal funding behind Badger Care. 20 counties have already taken that upon themselves. We are hoping that Kenosha will be part of that. I am hoping to do that as a private citizen because I'm a pastor and I feel that it is imperative for us to help the most vulnerable in our society. What that would mean number-wise, I have the breakdown for you and I will give this to you for your record after it's done. We have a breakdown county by county about what those numbers would mean. It's estimated that between January 1st of 2014 and June 30th of 2021, the amount of money that would come to Kenosha County federally is $79,800,000. And that would mean a significant change in the number of people that would be able to be covered by Badger Care who are currently not covered by Badger Care. Anything else that I need to say?
I just want to petition to have that this put on the agenda for the Human
Name
Services.
And address, please.
I'm sorry, Dawn Lingo, 6631 37th Avenue, Kenosha. And I just want to, I hope that this can get on the agenda of the Human Service Committee and then further on the agenda of the County Board.
My name is Veronica King. My address is 5518 34th Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin. I currently serve as Vice President of CUSH, and I serve as President of the Kenosha Branch NAACP. And I'm requesting that the Human Services Committee add this matter to the agenda. Currently, I work for the Department of Corrections. I'm a social worker and a clinical substance abuse counselor, so I see on a daily basis people in need of medical assistance, Medicaid, coming out of the correctional center. As I was sharing with some of my CUSH colleagues earlier, just as the homeless commit crimes and go to jail so that they can get three hots and a cot on a daily basis, people go to jail, commit crimes, and go to jail so that they can get their medicine. And where do they go to jail? From this area, Kenosha County. They're guaranteed to get that blood pressure medicine, that diabetes medication, that arthritis medication in the jail while they're in the jail. If they go to corrections, the Department of Corrections then picks up that piece and attends to their medical care while they're in corrections. Prior to coming out of corrections, they're knocking on my door, Ms. King, help me apply for Social Security disability so that they can get a medical card, Medicaid with the disability coming out of prison. And then they come right back in our communities. So people say inmates will tell you crime pays because they can get their medical, their dental, educational needs all met. And when they come out, they come back into the communities that they were convicted of in need of services again. So I ask that you consider adding this agenda item for the next county board meeting.
In addition to those who are incarcerated that Ms. King spoke about, this chart will tell you about the adults with dependent children who are in need of services. Should I give this information to?
Actually, if you want to give it to me. She'll see to it that we did. Anyone else wishing to address the committee?
I'm Joyce Belkey, and I live at 3700 4th Street. And I guess I'm here primarily as an individual, but I'll also say that I'm president of the AAUW, American Association of University Women, and the Kenosha County Retired Educators. And we, of both those organizations, we are very disturbed when we think of how tax money is not being used the most efficiently, because as we think education deserves it more than some of these others. And if there is a way that you can get $79 million to treat the people in Kenosha, let's do that instead of taking it out of education funds or whatever, even though it's not coming from the same pot. But people will still see it as their tax money that's not being used efficiently.
Any other citizens wishing this?
Do I still have a few minutes of my time?
Well, five per person. We don't normally go back and forth like
I'm
this.
I'm sorry.
So.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Sandy Milligan, 6603 Pershing Boulevard. I would like to echo that we would add this issue onto the agenda next month. I'm a member of CUSH, as are the rest of us here, and I'm also the president of WISDOM, which is our statewide organization. And I'd like to see us model what has been done in the 19 other counties where they have passes through referendum.
Any other citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of 5-5-2014?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, so motion and second. Youth and Governance? You get to vote first to approve the minutes that you were not here for.
Trust us.
You can abstain.
Yeah, if you lie. I mean, you can say, you know, yay, nay, abstain. If you want to be fancy like a member of Congress, then you can vote present, which is the same thing as abstaining.
I'll yay. Yay.
No pressure. You can vote no.
You could vote no. Yes, you can.
Committee?
That we don't know.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. That was really enthusiastic. Before we go into agenda item number four, would the two of you ladies like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Julia Alberth. I'm a junior from Wastosha Central, and I'm a youth and governance member of the committee.
I'm Brianna Ayers. I'm from Indian Trail Academy.
Favorite subject? Was human services your first pick?
Yeah.
Yes,
was.
It was.
Why, out of curiosity?
Well, I'm interested in kind of like the medical career and stuff, and since this overlaps with a lot of like medical like concepts, I guess, I thought it'd be interesting for me.
You want to see an autopsy, right?
That was kind of my reason as well.
Okay.
I was like, I want to see.
You're just as much a part of this as we are, I mean, you, with the exception of the fact that you get a non-binding vote on all the issues. You're under no pressure from any of us to vote any particular way. If I fail to acknowledge you so that you vote first, say something. Don't let me do that. I think I've gotten better about that. If there's any questions, certainly, you know, we here as county supervisors are at your disposal. Certainly everyone in human services is as well. If there's something you have a particular interest in that you feel like we're not addressing, say something. I think your mentor is Erin Decker, is it not, Supervisor Decker?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Say something to her or, you know, the committee, and we'll try to do the best we can, which is my fancy way of saying if you want an autopsy, shoot us an email. Okay. All right. Agenda item number four, approval of the following county executive appointments. Edna Hyland to the Brookside Board of Trustees, and Dr. Margaret Hodge to the Board of Health.
Thank you. I'll take both those items. I would ask that the committee move for the reappointment of Edna Hyland to serve on the Board of Trustees for Brookside She was originally placed on there in 2011. As you can tell from the write-up, she made 32 out of 36 meetings. The four that she missed were all excused. This appointment would go through January 2017.
Move to approve.
Second.
Is this a motion to approve both, or just one?
Adness.
Adness.
Okay, so we're taking them one at a time?
Yep.
Okay. There's been a motion to approve Ms. Edna Highland. Is there a motion and a second?
Okay. I gave a second.
Mm-hmm. Motion and a second. Ethan Gillings?
Yes.
Thumbs up.
Aye.
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 Okay.
The second appointment is a new appointment, and I hope Ms. Dave doesn't get emotional. This was the better for one of our dogs. But Dr. Regner Hodge is here this evening. She'd be a new appointment to the Board of Health. She'd be taking Dr. Lux's position, who is also a veterinarian. I should have mentioned that Dr. Regner Hodge is a veterinarian here in our community and is here to answer any questions that the committee would have.
Please do. Make this a lot less awkward.
I'm a lifelong resident of Kenosha, third generation. Graduated from St. Mary's Grade School, St. Joe's High School. Got my undergraduate degree up at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. And then my doctorate of veterinary medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Moved back to Kenosha in 1998 and worked at Kenosha Animal Hospital for 6 years. Took a year off to have my third child and came back in 10 years ago. Opened up Regner Vet Clinic. I have two small animal clinics. We're in the process of building a new 4,700 square feet clinic out by Highway 50. Mainly specialize in small animals, exotics, reptiles. I have a passion for public health. I have four children that I'm raising in this community. I think there is a need for some attention to certain types of zoonosis and, especially with, the Area Humane Society, just to work in partnership with animal behavior, making sure certain breeds are recognized and licensed, spay-neuter programs. So I'm hoping to bring a lot to the table, more than just an opinion on animal health.
Are there any questions? No, I have sort of one.
Sure.
I know there's been a lot in the media and certainly written about transmission of diseases and viruses from animals to humans. I know our Board of Health works in an advising capacity to the health department, but also, when we do have health issues in this community that arise, somehow that enters into the conversation. I know with H1N1 and swine flu and some other things that's been a part of that. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the medical literature that you've read, what that looks like, where you see some of that moving, and how that might play into some of your role on the Board of Health?
Sure. We work very closely with the WVMA, so they will give us, if there is any type of like swine flu, chronic wasting disease, anything like that, we are notified by them. So I'll probably be tipped off prior to, or maybe at the same time as you will. I think it's an increasingly, it's a concern in a sense that we used to think animal viruses were just animal viruses, but now we're seeing that they're crossing species, especially with the avian flu, encephalitis, and things like that. There is a concern, and not just that, but, Lyme's disease is huge. I don't think people think that that's an issue around here, but it is. It's a big issue, and I think it's very undiagnosed in this area. And there's a ton of different literature that would point to maybe some autism and things like that on the human side that really is, could be linked to more Lyme's disease. So there is a lot of things that are out there. Leptospirosis is a bacteria. From wild animals that not only dogs can get, but humans as well. So I think education is a huge part of it. I think right now people in this city feel like vaccines are just every veterinarian over vaccinates, and they kind of have a maybe not a trust thing with some veterinarians, but there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about in this community. And the only way they're going to get that is through an actual veterinarian talking about it, not just going to a shot clinic. You know, I think we have to do a better job with our local Humane Society and educating people on that too, which I think is lacking. So I think education is a huge thing. I can only educate people that come into my clinic, but I would have no problem with, you know, writing a blog or posting anything on trying to educate people about certain types of diseases and that, because it is a concern.
That would be fantastic. I don't know that we have much of that going on in county government, but if the Board of Health, you know, if there was agreement to do something like that, that would be really amazing. Yeah, thank you. I'm really glad you brought that up. I'm
sure.
Excited you're wanting to do this.
Thank you.
To the youth in governance, after your autopsy, go see her. anybody from the committee, anything?
I was just going to comment. I'm a registered nurse, so I've seen a lot of Lyme's disease patients when I was working in the hospital, and you had answered my question, how are you going to plan on providing education since there's such a deficit of about Lyme's disease, you know, how prevalent it is. I mean, I have a dog, so I always have to, you know, be concerned with him, you know, getting tick bites and that kind of thing. So, but I like the idea of the blog.
Right, and too, knowing that, you know, most of these ticks that are being brought in are probably being brought in on an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And if the animal's not covered, these ticks are crawling it. You know, I just pulled one off me yesterday. I was at my son's graduation. You know, that's scary.
Yeah.
But it's a huge problem, and not just Lyme's disease, ehrlichiosis and anaplasmosis. Those aren't issues, you know, with humans. But again, you know, we have a ton of, you know, subdivisions that are being built in rural areas, and there's coyote and fox in our backyards. Rabies, I think, is something we really have to kind of focus on too, because that too could become an issue. But yeah, I would be more than willing to, you know, educate people on that, and would be happy to help.
Right.
And I think if you did have something like a blog or IT department, you know, we could use what's called an RSS feed, so that as soon as she posts something, mm-hmm. everybody on the county board sees it at the same time. It's like an update, essentially, similar to how we get our agendas in a way.
And I'm very close with some physicians and pediatricians in town, so if I had a partner with them to make sure that, you know, I can only speak from a veterinary side, but I have colleagues who are friends that could comment on the human side as well, just to make sure all the information is correct.
Cool. Is there a motion and a second?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Arrington, second by Supervisor Blau. Youth and Governance?
Aye. Hi.
You look so scared.
You can say it loudly.
Yeah. A little gravitas is okay. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Welcome aboard. We'll see you. County board meeting, perhaps.
Thank you. Okay. I'll get that information. Okay. Am I good?
Yeah.
Done? All right.
Good.
Agenda item number 5, Department of Human Services 2013 Financial Status Year-End Report / 2014 First Quarter Report. Good evening.
Hello.
It's
hang on.
For those of you...
Can you raise the chair up? Because I feel like you're sitting on the floor. Yeah, there
that's
we go.
It.
Yeah, better.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
I'm so short, I don't even know when I'm short. So. Okay. For those of you who don't know me, because this is my first time appearing for the new people, I am Lori Staves, and I am the Chief Financial Officer for Human Services Department.
Sorry.
You will see me probably 4 times a year for sure, because this quarterly report was probably requested about four years ago. We've been doing this. So we are one of the largest expenditure department in the county. We are just under $80 million, but we have a very small levy of approximately $16 million. So we have a lot of state and federal funding sources, which coincide with any type of government regulations and the governor's budget and the federal budget, and so we try to keep you apprised of any changes during the year. So, because I was not able to attend your May meeting because it got switched to a Monday and I had a previous engagement, I just wanted to review the year-end report, which is old news, but then I really wanted to go in detail on the first quarter report. So I think you have both of them. I
The year-end report was emailed to you, and I didn't have it ready for email on Friday for the quarter, the first quarter. So the year-end report has all the columns filled in. And it says 2013 year-end financial status update. And I'll just, this is old news because we've closed out now. The year is closed and everything. And we did end the year with just under $800,000 returned to the general fund. So of our $16, $17 million of levy, we were able to be fiscally responsible and save some of that during the year and return it back to the general fund. What I'll do is go in detail on our first quarter report, okay? And this is the, it looks 2014 quarterly report, and it just has one column for March 31st completed. So the divisions are listed, Aging and Disability Services, or you might refer that to DADS. You might hear us refer that to DADS, Division of Aging and Disability Services. Looks like approximately from our first quarter data, year end, we might be about $50,000 short. So we might have more expenditures than revenue. But again, keep in mind it's first quarter, we're right out the gate, and when we see items that are going over budget, we correct them. So, you know, this is really new and current data, but it's just first quarter. So we have three more quarters to fix any type of problems or let you know what year end is going to be like. So this is our best estimate at this time. So I'm going to keep flipping because the first page is the summary page, but then we include some information about mostly each division underneath it. Pages 2 and 3 are for the Division of Aging and Disability Services. Page 2 starts off with just a recap of mental health and AOTA services. These are the two largest services within this division that do not have a lot of state or federal funding sources. Pretty much, probably about 85% are funded with our levy dollars. There's just no other funding available for this type at this point. So we walk through with the first section, it says state institutes, and we have our budget in their column, in the very first column, the 2014 annual budget. So you can see that we have budgeted for the year approximately 668 days. Actually, the first quarter we used almost a little over 50% of that, so 340 days. But our average cost per day is down under our budget. So we have net state institutes on the bottom of $189,416, which is our expenditures. Now you'll see on the very far right where it says estimated annualized over under budget. Using this data for the first quarter, we've estimated, you know, just a straight line estimate, and if we can adjust it, if we know of some things that we feel that will come in at about 443 over budget at this point for the state institutes. But if we continue down for hospital and inpatient psych, you can see that we are budgeted, estimated to be under budget. $233,775. So those are two categories that are inpatient services. We have the state institutes and we have hospital and inpatient psych. So if we net those out right now for total inpatient services, if the first quarter repeats itself for the next three quarters, we should be about a couple hundred thousand over budget. The next section, and then what I've done is very italicized. It says in blue, I don't know, it's light blue. I don't know if you can see it's light blue, but it's italicized. It says total inpatient services prior year. We're giving you this because this is where we were a year ago at the end of March. So actually, we're doing a little better this year than our comparison from a year ago, last March. The next section is outpatient services. And we have, again, I have the prior year estimate, and it looks like we're probably breaking even right now on the estimated annualized, because it It's $101,346 for the first quarter, and if we annualize that out for the 12 months, we're just a little bit over the budget, $585. So that's not a...
Can I ask you just real quick,
sure,
if you don't mind?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
No, surprise, right? Go ahead.
Just make sure, on the state institutes,
mm-hmm,
totals of $834,591.
Right.
That's for the whole year for that. Okay. You're right now estimating that we're going to be $443,000 over that,
correct,
number. Okay, that's 50%.
That's used, yes.
I mean, is that something, I guess...
But that's just using our first quarter data only, and we had carried over from the fourth quarter some very long-term clients that were in there, and we don't normally see those. Those were outliers. So they are now gone, and they were gone as of the middle of March.
Okay.
And so April and May should adjust back down. But I'm only giving you quarterly information.
So you're just, okay, you're not making assumptions. You're just going by basically the math of the
situation.
It's
straight line.
Okay.
Straight line.
All right. Okay.
Right.
All right.
I think it's also important to realize that those first two categories, those are court-ordered or court-involved people. These are not voluntary placements that the county has taken on. So everybody in the state institute, and that's Mendota or Winnebago, which are very expensive per day,
yeah,
are all under some...
And that's going to get back to when we look at this for budget. I mean, how do we pinpoint that? Something like that. When they're off by half, they're not sure. You've done this before. Is that a difficult thing to? I mean, we're talking about $500,000.
To be honest, if the judges say this is where the person has to go, that's
no, no.
What the
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it makes.
They come in
budgeting
with a pretty good educated guess. And like I say,
we look at the previous years and,
okay,
you know, try to go back.
Yeah. It just seems...
We look at the current clients within our system.
Yeah.
Like, we knew this was increased. We knew that it was going to be increased.
Okay.
And this was, what, three long-term patients?
There were three. Two remained through March, through the middle of March.
But again, I mean, if you look at, I want to say, last year, the previous year, you do see areas where there are some pretty strong spikes because of things that are legally, we're obligated to do that. So, I mean, it does happen from time to time, even with our best, you know, educated past history that we use to do this.
Sorry.
And no, that's fine. I mean, this is why we're going through this, you know, because I know there's a lot of new people around the table.
And actually, our two youth and governance members, if you have questions about what's being said, please ask. This is, you know, this is what you're here for. If you need an explanation, if you hear an acronym, ask. Otherwise, you'll go home not knowing.
We speak acronyms.
And we should use the term AODA. It's alcohol and other drug abuse.
Did I use that?
Yes, you did.
And I even put it. I even spelt it out the title up above. So okay. Okay, so outpatient, okay, so then the next section after outpatient is residential. And the residential, we budgeted 15,782 days. That shouldn't be a dollar sign. Just please cross that out. And then it's $125 cost per day. I have used $4,149 for the first quarter, but you can see our cost per day is under budget, which is a good thing. So last year we had a lot of increase in residential placements, and so our budget this year for 2014 was increased. As you can see, the prior year the budget was 1.7 million, and this year it was 1.9. However, our first quarter is showing savings, so we are actually under budget $415,000. So that's why these are all different. You know, these are the areas that use a lot of our levy in the Division of Aging and Disability Services. So we track these and we watch these. So we could be saving in one line item and going over in another. It's the net that we're most concerned with. For the next one is pharmacy services, and that again is going to be estimated at this point about 57 over. And then we have other mental health and AODA services. So if you add up this whole column, this is where our 50,000 is coming from, our estimate for the first quarter, which is noted on your first page in the summary, because all the other programs within this division are pretty much breaking even at this point. So it's this section that we're monitoring more closely with the levy need. And the next page, 3, is also pertains to the Division of Aging and Disability Services. We wanted to show some of our admissions over the past few years, what's happening. So the very top part, admissions, is the bottom red is institutes, the number of admissions to the hospitals is in blue, and the above is the admissions to our care center. And our care center is run by Kenosha Human Development Services. And they are used, it's housed here, it's on, we always go through this, 8? 59th and 8th Avenue. 54?
Care center, I'll go anyways.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's the old Kenosha Hospital, if anybody remembers where that is. But it's down here by Library Square. It's off of Library Park. And they run for, it's an alternative for possibly a hospital stay or an institute stay. And if John wants to add more information to it, they've been working with us for years.
They provide short-term stabilization with the goal of trying to keep the people out of the hospital or an institute at a much more reduced cost. And the average stay is like 3 to 4 days. They get them stabilized, hook them back up with their psychiatrist or treatment provider, and back in the community and monitored. So that number should always be fairly, as you can see, it's been fairly consistent over the years. And you'd like to see that number high versus the other two, the blue and the red, which are much more expensive. And don't necessarily always have the degree of follow through or release back to the community as quick as we like.
And then the one next to it, which John just talked about, the average length of stay is we have in hospitals, institutes, and then the care center. And you can see in the institutes, you know, we had talked on the previous page about how more over budget they were than the hospitals, and you can see that the average length of stay has crept up in the last 2 years. So again, these are those outliers, that they were long-term stays that we don't normally see.
Like how many outliers did you have?
There were 3 starting in 2013, and 2 continued on to the first part. And at $1,000 a day, that adds up. Even if it was just one.
Reservoir?
Yeah, I have, what institutes are you talking about when you refer to these? Are you talking about like Brookside or?
No.
All nursing homes?
State institutes.
These are mental health, yeah.
Yeah, okay. State, Mendota and Winnebago.
Winnebago.
These
the
are
two state,
state
hospitals.
Yeah, the state okay. institutes. Yes.
And how many, I'm going
to ask. These are court order.
Yes.
I mean, we have no choice.
How many?
Supervisor Ressler?
Yeah. How many do we have total people in these instances? I know these are Kenosha County residents that are in these state order institutions. How many would you, do you know off the top of your head how many we have?
Currently?
Yeah.
Because it fluctuates.
Sure
it
does.
Could be, I'm trying to think of the chart, 6 or 7. It could anywhere between 3 and 6. I don't know if I have that. The exact data.
Okay, that's interesting.
No, I don't.
It's never a massive amount of people, but for as few as it may be, it's an incredibly expensive issue.
Yes. Yeah, well, obviously. Yeah, okay. That's
way off the charts.
It's also one of the reasons, I think, why we've paid a lot of attention to what the state does in terms of like the governor's budget and issues around mental health, so that we can try to avoid a lot of the more expensive stuff.
Yeah.
And we haven't always gotten what we've needed from the state in terms of support.
You know, I don't know if you follow up, but they latest things, how the revamp, they think Milwaukee County is a mess in this area. I mean, do you have an opinion on that? I mean, they're doing legislation. There's, I know I'm just curious.
There was a lot of legislation that was recently passed that is beneficial to counties and how they can work with folks and maybe some additional funding to the expansion of the Comprehensive Community Services Program, for example, which is a community-based program that deals with folks that have mental health issues in an effort to keep them here in the community, manage them, stabilize them, help them through recovery. That expanded. We're part of a consortium right now with Racine. We're getting that paperwork in. The state is, we've been running a CCS program, Comprehensive Community Service Program, for several years now. Racine's just getting on board. We're going to do it together, which should be a benefit. So the recent legislation that passed, we viewed as being a plus to us trying to reach out and help more people in order to keep the deep end cost at a minimum.
The Milwaukee situation, I think, is a little bit different because they operated their own. We don't. So you'll hear things like that about Milwaukee come up and statistics that are not necessarily reflective of what's going on in Kenosha because we live under a completely different environment in many cases. Although there may be some small similarities, it is not the same.
And we, I can't speak to the system in Milwaukee, but I know here in Kenosha, we've done a lot with NAMI, who's done a lot of training with law enforcement in the community. You'll hear about CIT and CIP training. One is partners and one is for the law enforcement. And they've trained well over 100 officers, both on sheriff and KPD, on how to deal with folks that are having mental difficulties when they go out on that call. And that the police force raves about that training. And that has been a plus. We have a very strong, our crisis unit, which on the next page you'll see some information on them, has a very strong relationship with law enforcement because they have to work hand in hand when making a determination on whether that person should be hospitalized, go to the care center, or released to a loved one. So
I'm sure it's not easy.
Supervisor Gable.
I did CIC training, and like you say, it is to recognize the issue, calm the situation down, and put the person where he needs to be rather than throwing him in jail. So.
Or she.
Or she.
He.
I take.
And then the last chart just on page 3 is the number of emergency detentions that we're seeing. And keep in mind, anything for 2014 is we have straight line that out for an estimate just based on the current quarter data. Okay, so, and then we thought we would change up a little bit, and we've added 2 new pages to this report, pages 4 and 5. And these are crisis information and charts. On page 4 is adult crisis contacts. And each pie represents the year, and the pie slices are the presenting problems for that particular crisis contact. So, for example, in 2013, 2011, 12, and 13 are actual numbers. 2014, again, are estimates based upon first quarter data. So every chart kind of starts like the abuse criminal justice. That's the first color. It starts at noon or 12 o'clock and then goes around clockwise. So, for example, in 2013, crisis contacts for adults for abuse or criminal justice area was 88. Alcohol and drugs, 1,117, and so forth. Okay. So we thought if you looked at the charts, it's seeming pretty consistent. We don't see a lot of the pie slices changing as much. But we wanted to give you the presenting problems. So we have abuse, criminal justice, we have a category for alcohol and drugs, we have suicide attempts or danger of suicide, mental health, family interpersonal issues, and then medical and somatic issues. So we do have this data, and we thought that this would be interesting for you to see the number of contacts. And then on page 5 is juvenile crisis. So we have adults, and then we have juvenile crisis. And the difference for the juvenile crisis is that these are cases, not necessarily contacts. And we have the note down below because a case is opened, but it could be multiple contacts with that family or individual. So for example, in 2011, there were 9,331 contacts, but there were just so many cases. So we thought we'd let you know that with a juvenile crisis case, there could be multiple contacts, and it could be phone or face-to-face contacts, but we didn't want to tell you there were 12,000 presenting problems, you know, that we wanted to give you the type of presenting problem for that case.
Question on, sure. On 4 and 5, you're going to hate me for this. I love the fact that you've included the actual number. Is it also possible that we could see the percent as well?
Sure.
Okay, because I know if these are generated in some Microsoft program, it can do that. So.
Yeah, no, cool. We can do both.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
So that's new information that we are going to share. So that's, if I go next to Children and Family Services, on the front page, it is showing that the out-of-home placements, now this is for children out-of-home placements, that we're seeing an over budget of about $210,000 with the current data for the first quarter, offset by about $70,000 in some savings and recoupment and reimbursement. So there's a net projected deficit for Children and Family Services about $140,000. On pages 6 and 7 talks about their out-of-home placements. On page 6 gives you some financial data, and it shows that the number of days, the cost of the days variance is up, but the daily rates are up. And I'm looking on the bottom section here in the lower right-hand corner as the recap.
You mentioned reimbursements for the new folks. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Reimbursement? Oh, well, we have every one of our providers that we contract with, you know, we're about $76 million, and we contract for about $55 million of that in our department. And we monitor each and every one of those contracts, and if regulated, if it's a certain dollar value, that provider must have an audit every year. And then that audit is passed on to us, and we review it, and it goes through a calculation of, are they making, you know, they have a certain limit that they can profit from and keep in their reserves if they're a nonprofit. And if it's too much, or if they go over that limit, we ask for recoupment. And $40,000 of that so far, we have been returned from one of our providers. So that's an ongoing fiscal responsibility that we do every year.
Question. When you say providers, define it, providers.
Our network of providers could be like Kenosha Human Development Services, Professional Services Group. We contract with various agencies, for-profit and non-profit, within the community and some outside the community to perform our services for our community members, for Kenosha County members.
If I'm correct, and I recall a finance committee meeting from about a year or two ago, it was a decision made by the county board that they thought we could still deliver to our residents at a much lower cost if we were to go that route, and so they made the choice to do so. For better or for worse?
No, I'm just curious.
Okay. And then page 7 just kind of gives you a visual of the out-of-home placements. So the solid line is where our budget is, and the actual dotted line is where the actuals are coming through. So you can see we're just through the first quarter showing about $209,000 over budgeted for out-of-home juvenile placements. We did have 2 weeks ago a reimbursement check from one of our residential care facility that had been in the works for probably about 2 years from the state, and the state has had them now send us reimbursement checks on an issue that the state had found with them. They were a state provider, and so we did receive a check of about $200,000 back.
But that was just recently, so I can't put it in my first quarter. But you'll see it in the second quarter. So that could very well take care of our placement issue for this year.
Question,
Supervisor Renslow?
Do we audit these outside guys?
Yes, we do.
Is that your department that does that, or?
Well, we do our contracts. We audit our contracts.
Okay.
You know, so if we have a contract with them, yes, we go out and do site reviews and we review their audits.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to review those, then.
No, I. No.
There have been requests to do so, you know, in the past, and so I, you know, if
not right now, that's I'm not.
Okay, I'm just letting you know.
Thank you.
So that's Children and Family Services. Our next division on the front page is health, and they are showing some personnel savings. I don't have a detailed page for health, so they're actually showing a levy return or a levy savings of $29,000 so far. Our medical examiner, which is also in our department,
forgive me, I don't believe we have the health page.
Yeah.
We have
there's
no health.
There is no health.
There isn't one. Oh, okay.
There's no detail page for health.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, because we're not.
Meaning there's no page at all.
Right.
Okay.
Well, there's
all right.
A summary page.
There's no page 7A.
There's no backup data.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No,
sorry.
There's no backup
sorry.
Data. Usually health and veterans and workforce development, we haven't, like, added anything for that. So, not to say it couldn't be in the future. Okay, so for the medical examiner, right now, currently, we're about $7,000 over budget, and it really is due to the first quarter with their revenues. Their revenues, you know, we can only charge for certain fees. A lot of our services are done by statutory. You know, we have to do those services free of charge. So our fees have been down slightly from our estimate. The good news, though, is on pages 8 and 9, and I don't want to get any morbid, but on page 8, we have some statistical information on the type, the number of death and autopsies that we have done. 2012 and 2013 are actuals, year-end totals. So in 2012, we had 167 autopsies. It's up at the top, the little total. And then it shows it broken down between accidental deaths, homicides, natural deaths, suicides, and then some are the undetermined. Then in 2013, we had 164 autopsies, again, in these areas. For 2014 through the first quarter, we've done approximately 33 autopsies. And that is lower than the other previous year's quarter, first quarter. So hopefully we're shrinking that a little bit. The autopsies are not done here in Kenosha County. We have a contract with Milwaukee County and their medical examiner office. We actually transport bodies if an autopsy is determined that needs to be done. We will transport the body to Milwaukee County. We've been doing this for 3 years, I believe, or this is our third year. And they charge $1,200 an autopsy, which is an all-inclusive rate, so we don't have to pay for any more blood tests, x-rays, or anything like that. So our medical examiner is a lay medical examiner. She's not a doctor. And when you have an autopsy, you have to have the doctor. But that autopsy rate has not changed, and they don't have any intention of changing it for a while. So it's been working out quite well.
Do all of the autopsy go into your budget?
Yes.
Nothing on the sheriff's side, huh?
No.
Is that?
Statutory.
Okay. Thank you. Seems different, but that's okay.
Should he write us a check?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean.
The offices are purposely independent.
Okay.
Yeah.
From one another, so it doesn't look like.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we take the statistical information one step further into graphs on page 9. So we've actually graphed a few more years for you. And keep in mind, 2014 is just year-to-date information. So we have the accidental homicides, natural suicides, and undetermined. And for the last couple of years, we've broken out accidental
into motor vehicle, drug overdose, and other because of the alarming rate of the drug overdoses that has been happening in this county. So we're still tracking that.
Is that still heroin?
Yes.
That's all the morbid information I have for the medical examiner. And then...
It's in color.
It's in color, yes. Veterans is at a break even at this point, so we didn't put anything in there. And then workforce development is showing some savings, and it's from our contracted savings of it's about $20,000. And then Brookside Care Center rounds out our last two pages. And that's on pages 10 and 11. So on page 10 is their first quarter financials. And this is a summarized version. And so column 1 has the budget. And column 2 is the year-to-date through March actuals. And then 3 and 4 is the target dollar over and under and percentage over and under. And column 5 is a comparison to 2013. In the yellow on the bottom is our bottom line. So the big green, the total green, or darker green, is total revenue. Our darker orange is the total expenditures. And so yellow is showing through the first quarter a savings of $288,198.
Yeah, I was at the trustee meeting today at Brookside. And looking at their utilities. They contract out all of their laundry now, which you would think would bring down their utilities. And the county board also approved a $50,000 for LED lighting, which is supposed to bring down the utilities. And they're showing their $9,000 over budget on utilities. When I asked what happened, well, they claimed that was because of a harsh winter. I don't know, but...
I don't think the LED is installed yet.
That's not installed yet, but right. The laundry has been outsourced.
Yes.
Well, their answer was a harsh winter.
Oh, okay. I mean, I can look into it.
I don't know. I asked Kelly about it.
At this point. Oh, okay. Is she going to get back to you on it?
Yeah, and Fran asked about it also.
Okay, so she's going to get back to you on
probably,
it?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. I'll make a note.
Because you think they took out all their laundry out that, and I didn't mention that to Fran about the laundry. I thought about that afterwards. That's a high figure, considering they don't do all that laundry there anymore.
Right, and I know we did make an adjustment in this year's budget for the laundry.
Oh. Okay.
Because we knew it at budget hearing time, we had already outsourced as of last May.
Right.
So I did make an adjustment.
Okay. It could have been the winter. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the laundry savings was already in the 2014 budget.
All right.
Yeah. And then page 11 talks about the different payer sources we have at Brookside. So I'll go into my explanation and information at Brookside. So we have residents there who are on Medicare, Medicaid, and private pay. Medicare is our short-term residents. People come in from rehab. They come in from the hospitals. They've had some type of surgery. Maybe they've had a hip replacement, or maybe they've been ill, and they just need some rehabilitation, some recoupment time in a nursing home. So it's pretty much a short-term stay. Medicaid is when a person who can no longer take care of themselves and does not have the funds to pay privately for a nursing home, that is, they're on Title 19, might be another word, you know, that you would hear, or state assistance. So that is the Medicaid portion.
So do you think governance, is any of this making sense, or do we need further explanation?
I know.
All right.
You understand the difference between Medicare and Medicaid, right? Don't explain.
Yeah.
You do. Okay.
You're just quiet, so I wanted to make sure you haven't asked anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to know the difference between those two. As long as you
okay.
Yeah.
And then we have people who are private pay. And so they will pay to live at the nursing home, to be cared for. They can no longer live at their house, and they can either have the funds to do it, personal funds, or they have these long-term care insurance and things like that. So we have these three categories. Private pay rate is $300 a day, and it is meant to break even, for having us to break even through all our costs. We are a county home. Medicaid rate, we're about $157 a day on average for a Medicaid rate. And so we do lose about $120, $130 a day for every Medicaid resident we have. And then Medicare is an all-inclusive reimbursement. So not only is it for room and board, but it's for all their physical therapy, it's for their medications, it's a one-time, and it's based upon their level of care. Somebody might have less needs, nursing needs, some might have more nursing needs, so the Medicare reimbursement would be different based upon their medical needs or their therapy needs or things like that. So we have an average cost, which is on page 10 on the bottom of, I can't get to it. Our average cost per day right now is about $277, let's say. Our average Medicare reimbursement is about $490. So our Medicare rate adds about $880, $190 to our bottom line to help offset the $120 to the $130 of our Medicaid rate. So what we're losing on Medicaid, our rates in Medicare are making up to help pay for the total of $277 a day. And our private pay rate is meant to break even, okay? So we budgeted in the yellow 37 Medicare, 84 Medicaid, and 29 private pay per day at residence. So we have 150 as a total occupancy per day. We have 154 beds in the facility. But we have, you know, some vacancies. There's changeover, one person leaves. We're never 154 beds. So we've
built right now.
Pardon me? They are right now? They're filled up right now? See? Make a liar on me. Thanks, Rick. But we budget. We don't budget 100% occupancy, okay? So through the first 5 months, you can see in the darker green where it says year-to-date average for Medicare column, our average census is 42.8. We budgeted for 37. Remember, Medicare is the payer source that adds to our bottom line. So this is why every resident over that 37 budget is adding more to our bottom line, which is a good thing. Medicaid, we had budgeted 84, we're at 70, almost 74, 73.9. So we're not losing as much per day as we thought we were because we have less Medicaid patients. And our private pay, we're up one. We had budgeted for 29 and we're at 30. They are very conscientiously watching admissions and making sure we have the right mix when we admit somebody totally into the facility so that we are not losing a lot of money, because Brookside has given back to the general fund their own operating revenues in the last 2 years and have been off the levy in four. Budget. So we are running a county nursing home off the levy and have returned money to the general fund the last 2 years. So it's this payer mix that we are really starting.
Maybe not discuss it for today, but you ever thought of keeping it? Brookside keeping it?
Oh yes. We're on track for including it, yes.
Well,
in the future needs.
Well, okay, that's for a different day.
Oh, okay.
The only thing I can say is that, you know, it's great that we're off the levy,
yes.
But sometimes we have other areas where we have to make that kind of shift from one department to another as opposed to some of the line item transfers you heard about earlier. Pros and cons to that.
Yeah.
Surprising. One of the things I've been getting on a soapbox as far as Brookside. And it's not in the immediate plans. I know they got plans about expanding, but I think from going to some of the health department meetings and a lot of the meetings on AODA and everything else, that the projections, and I've said this a number of times, for the combative dementia patients, those numbers are going up and up and up. The only place for those patients to go is Mendota or what's the other place?
Winnebago.
Where?
Winnebago.
Winnebago. And we've got a lot of citizens in our county that they'd have to go up there to see their mother, their father, everything. If we've got a county nursing home, I would like to see us deal with that here, but I know it's very expensive. But I don't think we should be making a big profit when we could be making a small profit and dealing with that problem here. So in the future, somewhere in the future, I hope we address that problem because it's a growing problem and it's going to have to be dealt with sooner or later.
So to conclude, and I believe me, I don't do this every month or every quarter, but I thought I'd walk through these very detailed tonight. So to conclude on the bottom line, the first quarter, it looks like we are, as a department, having a levy surplus of a net of $140,000. So that's the first quarter report.
Questions about the first quarter? Do you want to walk us through 2013?
Well, that's why I went through detail in 14, if you want me.
Oh, so we can just...
Well
one mirrors the other.
It does. Yes. Okay. I mean, the same pages and everything, but you'll see 2013 data.
Okay.
But I thought I'd give you the current news in detail rather than the old news. I can do whatever the committee wishes. Or I will do whatever.
Questions? Okay.
I have one informational item.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, we reported our W-2, which is our work program, the Wisconsin Works program that started at the state. We had it since 1997, I believe, that we were running the W-2 program for the Kenosha County. And the state put it out for an RFP, and we lost the RFP, and so that is now to a provider called ResCare, but they are housed at the job center. We're working with them as a partner for our community. There's another program called FSET, Food Stamps Employment and Training Program, and the state put that out for an RFP, and we have lost that RFP, and it went to ResCare. Now, we're letting you know, and I'll be saying this again next Thursday at Finance when I do the quarterly report with them. It's pretty much a break even for us. There isn't a lot of levy, you know, issues or anything. ResCare has also joined us in the building for FSET, so we are housed there, and we are working with them through the transition. As of July 1st, they will be the provider for FSET, and it should be a smooth transition.
Supervisor Cable.
Any headcount loss? I mean,
there's some contracted that will be adjusted, approximately 9.
I don't know if exactly. I think it's come down to 3 or 4.
Oh, 3 or 4?
Yeah. They're getting absorbed by another program. So. But it's contracted agency right now that's taking the blunt of that.
And a lot of that money was directly passed through to help with the clients, so we didn't have a lot of savings on our ends. It won't be a big hit for us financially. That's just an announcement.
Any other questions?
No, I don't.
Agenda item 6, such other business authorized by law. Yes. Mr. Jansen.
Just a reminder that we have scheduled a tour of the job center on
June 17th, which is a Tuesday, at 8:30. It'll be about a two-hour tour where we'll take you around to each division. They'll have about 20 minutes or so to tell you what wonderful things they do, and we would encourage any and all of you to attend. You certainly can do that by letting Sharon know tonight or contacting her soon, so we can move that forward. I know Supervisor Ritz will have you.
I'll be there. Yep.
So, great.
Agenda item 7, committee member comments. I have just one. My apologies. The resolution about Badger Care expansion was supposed to be on our agendas, and we had some timing issues in terms of getting that to you, so we'll see in the future if we can potentially get that scheduled for discussion.
Speaking about that, if it was to be put on our agenda, how are you looking at that? There's a lot of moving parts in that whole thing, okay? I hope you I know you do. I mean, lots. And for us, it could be a day education process on that if we want to totally understand where Medicaid in the state of Wisconsin was, where it is now, and why it is this way, and a lot of political things on that. How do you want to present this? If you want to take it up, I mean, who's going to be here? Are we just going to discuss among ourselves? Is going to be presenting from different sides, or what? I mean,
no, I'm suggesting, you know, look at a resolution, so look at it.
Well,
you know, if there's particular information that you feel is relevant that needs to be part of that discussion, then bring it forward.
I understand that.
I mean, I can't give you any further guidance beyond that. I mean, it's the will of this committee as to how it chooses to move through those waters. So as a member, if you think that there's something particularly pertinent, then, you know.
Well.
But, you know, wait till it gets agended before we can, you know, because I don't know exactly when that'll be, so.
Okay. So when it does, I guess I'd like to, I mean, I'd sure like to have, I don't know, I mean, I'd like to know how you're going to proceed with that. Are you going to have one person present, two? I mean, are we just going to sit and discuss? I mean, it could be, I could spend 2 hours on it myself. I understand from A to Z on that thing. It could be a two-hour discussion just myself, and I don't want to do that. I mean, that's not, I don't know if that's appropriate to have a one-sided, I mean, it is.
There's really no structured format per se in doing these things. So, again, if you feel that there's a particular something or way we should proceed that you think would be most helpful, then...
Okay.
Yeah, because there's...
Well, I'd like discussion. I mean, should we... Yeah. That's what I want to...
I mean, typically these...
Bring in some people that are involved in this, in the Medicaid in the county. There's people. You know them. Or someone from here, from our department. Are we to be educated on Medicaid here? Does this committee want to sit and understand? Just going to say, it appears on this agenda. Let's say it appears next month. Okay? Let's just say it does. I'm asking you as the chairman, are you going to have people presenting it or not? I mean,
they asked us to take a look at
it. I believe, Supervisor, are you asking, are we going to... get the people that would give us the backdrop on the entire, like, the history of Medicaid in Wisconsin and, you know, where it was and where it is now. You would consult with the proper.
If you want to, we can do that, I guess.
Yeah,
that's why I want to have the discussion, because I think we should. If we're going to go into that, it's not just a quick, yep, let's put it on the referendum, no big deal. Okay, sounds like a good idea. Because there's a whole lot of parts to this thing, believe me.
Okay. I mean, there
and
is.
I can cut it down to, I think I could convince everyone in this panel not to do it. And I can also convince you to do it. Okay. I can convince myself to do either way.
Okay.
I'm serious. That's where that thing is. It's not, in a nutshell, we're not in the world's worst shape than people make it sound. We're one of the best states with Medicaid ever. We're in the top three that's ever been there. So we're at a really good position. It's been a little adjusted. Mm-hmm. Some of the people have presented here to this evening and at the other meetings made it sound like the world has come to an end.
It hasn't.
About how our Medicaid is going right now, because it's very political, I think, with some people.
Yeah.
It is. It's an absolute political wedge issue. And if you dig into it, I've talked to people that flip a coin about it. I'm serious. That are both sides of this thing, politically. They say it's a flip of the coin if we should do this or not. Because the whole, if you cut it down to the very, very basics of this thing, right down to the last bottom line, in my opinion, it's $830 a year for the people that don't, that are losing a little bit of their Medicaid coverage. $830 a year for someone that's just parents that don't have kids, that are 100% of Medicaid, or 100% of the poverty line. Okay, $830 is really what it comes down to, with the subsidies from the Affordable Health Care Act. Okay, for if you're in a hundred, like between 100 and I forget, it's 100 to 133 or something, I forget. But you get subsidies from the Affordable Health Care Act for your deductibles and your out of pockets. Your total out of cost is $830. Okay, if you have children, if you have a dependence of any sort, that goes up to 300% of the poverty level. So if you are a poor person, you should flock to Wisconsin for your health insurance. I mean, it is, it's not as bad as people are making it sound. I mean, it isn't. So I just thought we'd bring it up for discussion now that
it sounds like you have a lot to contribute.
No, but the thing is, I do and I don't. I mean, it's a matter of an opinion, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, right? And how? And the five of us, six of us here, are going to make a decision to put it on a referendum.
No, it'll go to the board.
Well, I'm just saying, 23 people.
I can almost guarantee you, without even calling any names on this board, if it makes it upstairs, this thing will be turned over and turned over, parted down the middle, down to the letter, to the dollar, to the number, in the best interest of whichever way we decide to vote. When they talked about it, if I may intrude, Chair, this won't be quick. I guarantee you, I can name five supervisors right now. This will not go quick.
Okay.
At all.
At this point, you know, it's nice to look that far down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's deal with here for the moment.
Sure.
If there's something you feel we should take a look at or a particular way, bring it.
I think we
That's
should.
Why you're here.
Okay, I understand. I think we should have our people here at the county to explain the history of Wisconsin's Medicaid by group. And by group meaning people that don't have children, I mean people that have kids. Before, to get Medicaid around here, you were better off having a child, because otherwise you got put on that waiting list, remember? And it was something like, I got to note that, the waiting was something like thousands, 40,000 people were on this waiting list. They were childless adults, okay? Between 0 and 200% of the poverty level, or the federal poverty level. That now has been taken care of. Those people all have it now. All those people that had to wait now have Medicaid. So this is filtered down to just, they say it's 2,700 in this county. I wonder where they came up with that number, but I'll give it to them. She said 2,700 people that have to be adults that don't have kids, that are between 100 and 200%, something like that, the poverty line.
130, I think
it is. Is it? Okay, so there's, and those people, those 2,700, could go to the Affordable Health Care Act exchanges, and it will cost them, with everything filtered down, $830 a year. Then they got full coverage, and they can pick their doctors from the networks. They're not in Medicaid, which a lot of doctors aren't taking, versus a private health plan that's from the exchanges, either Ground, County Ground, WPS, I think, is in the exchanges. You know that. You've seen them. So that's, you know what I'm saying? These are the discussions you have to have on this thing. It's like you could go both ways on that. I go, Medicaid sounds better, but maybe not.
As a chairman once told me when I was a freshman county supervisor, if there is a particular something or way or fashion that you feel we should be looking at it, bring it forward.
I just told you, I'd like to have someone here explain the whole history.
We can do that. Okay. We also have some great resources from the state legislative fiscal bureau about that
as well. If you put that on the agenda, they will come. If you put that on the agenda, please ask them to be on it. That's all I'm asking. Okay? Yeah,
and there'll be some stuff from the fiscal bureau too, which is written extensively about that.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Arrington. Youth and Governance.
Aye. That one should be easy.
I'm
sure you want to go.
That means you're ready to go.
I want to stay.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The committee stands adjourned.
Allergies are a cold.
Allergies.